Welcome to Real Talk with Brad Maske.
Inflation is starting to pick up, and the Federal Reserve is also talking about raising interest rates again this month.
It is fear. There are many on the sideline. What happens if prices fall another 5%? You've lost the equity you put in the home.
There's still a backlog. Lots of houses on the market. According to the Case-Shiller Index, prices have double-dipped in most major markets.
Cutting through the noise.
Real Talk with Brad Maske, the Valley's number one live and local real estate show, only on KMJ.
No, you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joining the studio with Brad Maske. Brad's a broker in Visalia at Realty Stars. He's been helping buyers and sellers for over four decades now. You can reach him via email, brad at kmjbrad.com, or call him now. He's live in the studio, 490-5858, or 800-776-5858. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How was your week?
My week was good. It's a strange week, but a good week.
Yeah.
This fall, you know, and Monday was kind of a holiday, the Columbus Day holiday.
It was a holiday, yeah.
It was a holiday for some people, and some people were working, and some people said it wasn't a holiday. You know, it was kind of an interesting week.
Good.
We haven't seen much rain yet this year, but also at that long holiday weekend was the last chance the governor had to sign all of his bills that were on his desk. So something like he signed 878 new pieces of legislation and only vetoed about 170. So think of how many new laws are taking effect in all of our lives every year. Some of the laws clarify other laws. Some are brand new laws. Some are California only the first ever to do it laws, as usual. But all of those things are going to have effect on our real estate, on what's going on out there. And some of them, he signed them a week ago Friday, so on the 9th. Although we'd read the laws before and had some concept of them, some of them are so complex that even after they've passed, you read them and read them and reread them and read them again to say, what did that really say? We had a legal update at our Association of Realtors on Wednesday morning, and the head attorney for California Association of Realtors did the update for us. And as part of his legal update, he was describing one of the new laws. And what he said about the law was completely different about what I thought it said. And he said, no, this is what it is. This is, California's never done this before. This is what they're telling local government. And I happen to have a case going before the Planning Commission in less than 2 weeks where we're doing exactly what he says the new law says. You don't have to go to Planning Commission for approval to do it. So I pulled up the law as signed, as amended, as everything on it, because they strike them out and change them and recolor them and then move them, and you got to see what they really signed. And it's 21 pages, right? And I found in the middle of the law, it does not say what he said. It says exactly the opposite. So I pulled it out. I read it, reread it, sent it to the attorney via email and said before, we were the first group that he'd talked to. And I said, before you do this presentation again, read this law and tell me how this works, because it's not what it says. So anyway, you know, that's how complex it is, that when you have a group of attorneys reading these laws that are brand new laws, just written and modifying existing laws, even they can miss and try to figure out what's there. And they're trying to put legal updates out for us on these laws. And they do affect us, you know, just like the power outage affects us, just like PG&E. And I think that was big news this week, that PG&E went in to get their hand slapped for shutting off the power, that they were told that they had to shut off the power because they can't cause any more fires. And their mea culpa was, we're sorry, we didn't notify you far enough in advance, and we had no way of handling 2 million people on our website at once, so they just crashed. So we couldn't control that, but you better get ready because it's going to take us 10 years. We are 10 years behind. So the environmentalists are telling them that there's a brand new switch that they can put all over, into these electric grid that'll shut it down in a tenth of a second. It can't even make a spark. It's so good. And I mean, that's what they're claiming. And they're filing lawsuits against them, saying that if they would adopt this new technology, that if anything happens to the grid at all, it'll shut it off in a hundredth of a second, and there won't even be a spark. The wind blew your wires. Boom, it's instantly off. And so I tried to read up on this technology, and it's absolutely untested. It hasn't been used anywhere. And it's, you know, imagine the complexity of the of this grid that has power coming at it both directions from your solar, from this. And if it could shut down every time there was any fluctuation of power within a hundredth of a second, do you know how often your grid would shut down? I mean, what computer could regulate whether that was the wind that blew that thing or whether it was this to shut it down? I mean, it's crazy to think that that technology exists that is there, but they're saying it's there. They're alleging that it's there and that PG&E is refusing to take in this new technology that no one in the world is using, but PG&E isn't. And again, remember that California is one of the few states that says that if the utility lines that they forced you to put there, that they won't let you clear the trees off of, cause a fire, then they're responsible for the fire. It's not our fault. And I mean, again, policy forcing that. So what we have now is we have a very unusual era in California house pricing. We've got groups of homes that are in areas where we know that a couple of times every year, maybe more, they're going to be in total power shutdowns. And this is going to go on for at least 10 years while they figure out how to trim the trees back, how to add whatever technology they can to do it to protect themselves. And, of course, the new green answer is just put your stuff all underground. Can you imagine the miles of underground and the EIR to go dig through our forests to put electric lines underground? I mean, if you tried to get a permit today to put in a new utility line, it would take you 20 years, especially if it went across forest or government-owned property. You know, you just wouldn't see it. The environmentalists would battle it right down to the very ground. And now they're telling them, not only do we not want you to put them in the air, we want you to bury them through the forest. Why don't you just get out there and bury them? You know, and can you imagine the cost of doing that?
Yeah, because roots aren't going to affect it, I'm sure.
Roots, rocks, yep. You know. I mean, every time I get an underground bid, the underground bid looks something like this. Let's say that I got 100 feet of trenching that's going to be done, and it's a 2-foot deep trench. So and it's 1 foot wide and 2 foot deep. It's something like it's $10 a lineal foot to go from point A to point B, and at the very end of it, it says, except for the rock clause. And the rock clause says that if we hit anything other than clean fill dirt all the way across this, then this whole contract becomes time and material, and there's no guarantee on exactly what this is going to cost you to take across this, including the clause that if there's any unexpected utility line that they know is plus this, plus this, plus this. Imagine what the rock clause looks like digging through the forest where you're going through trees and rocks and... Yeah, and I got to cross over your meadow, which, by the way, the Sierra Club had their own private cabin in Yosemite, and it's out in the middle of the Tuolumne Meadow, right? It's all the way across it. And I remember back in the late 70s when they were tired of the overhead power lines servicing their cabin out there. So they hired a trencher with nothing and just trenched it and undergrounded it straight through Tuolumne Meadow to their cabin.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I, at that point, I knew the environmentalists actually only want to do what they want to do. They don't care what, you know, if it's for them, it's okay, but you don't know how to trench through the meadow. They do. That's why we have to go through the environmental impact report. But anyway.
Because they know more than anyone else does.
Right, right. They're the experts on it. Of course, they could do it any way they wanted to. So they wanted their power to their place, but not ours. But back to this. So now I want you to look at these houses that are in these areas, these foothill areas that are affected by wind. And we got northern and southern California winds, both sides, that every year, because of the Sierras, because of the, it creates with the pressure system changes, it creates high winds constantly. So you know it's going to happen. And it is not climate change, but you can call it climate change if you want. I don't care. I can just tell you for the last 100 years that every fall, both north and south, they have these high winds that come through and blow these trees and winds up to 100 miles an hour. And every time there's storms, you see it going through the Sierra, 70, 80, 90 mile an hour winds at the top of the peaks and blowing through. So every time they have that, you're going to be shutting power off. And sometimes it's going to be shut down for up to 3 days. And you live in one of those communities, right? So now when you sell your house, you have to advise the buyers that, you know, it's possible that two or three times a year, all power will be shut off. You may not get much notice. You may get 24-hour notice to protect your freezer, to protect your food, to protect your whatever, to get some water, because you may not be able to run water while the power's down, depending on where you are. Signal lights will be out, traffic lights will be out, no heating, no air conditioning possibly. And so what steps will they have to make to retrofit those houses so that they will continue to function to some nominal habitability? But by the way, if it was a rental property and you did that, you'd be required by law to put the tenants up in a hotel somewhere if you were going to be out. I mean, probably California, they'd probably say you owe them a hotel. If you're going to shut their power off and they have anything, kill their food and all that, you better take care of it, landlord. You know, I mean, so, but what are the landlords going to do when PG&E shut them off or SCE shut them off? What do you owe your tenants in terms of that? I mean, these are lawsuits that are coming in California, the litigious society that we are. So we got to fix that. We know that 99% of the installed solar will not provide power when the utility has shut down. 99%. I had one expert tell me it's probably 97%. 3% might be there that I'm overstating it. And I said, okay, I'll take that. I'll say it's 90% will not provide you power when the electricity is shut off. Why? Because you signed a contract that says you're not, when they shut it down for safety purposes, they're not going to let you push power back into their grid. Period. So you have to be totally self-contained within and have an ability to stop from pushing power into the grid that they shut down for safety purposes. And the reason they did that is because if they shut down the power in your neighborhood so that they can work on a power line, and your solar is pushing power right back at them, and they electrocute their worker, they don't like it.
Yeah.
It kind of causes some liability issues. And this is why the vast majority of the solar systems out there are not going to give you power when the grid is down. So that's going to affect your value. When we come back after the break, we'll talk more about it, and we'll also talk about insurance rates in those areas.
Oh, great. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. This is Real Talk on KMJ. We'll be right back.
Now back to Real Talk on News Talk 580, 1059 KMJ.
Hey, welcome back to Real Talk. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joined in the studio with Brad Maskey. Brad's a broker in Visalia Realty Stars. 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Let's go to the phones now and say hello to, is it Jerry?
Yes, this is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
You're on
the
air.
Okay, question. My husband and I are looking into replacing the two air conditioning heating units on our home.
Yes.
And because of all of the restrictions that California is trying to implement with respect to fossil fuels and natural gas and propane, what do you recommend? An all-electric unit or go ahead and replace it with a propane unit?
Go ahead and replace it with a propane unit. Because I think that even if they are able to get rid of natural gas, they're still going to have to allow propane. We've got enough rural areas that they have no other source of power, not enough electricity. And I'm going to tell you that the cost of heating your house with electricity is three times the cost of using propane. And, I mean, the expense will be huge. So I absolutely, definitely go with the propane.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, see, I think Governor Cuomo found out last week the hard way when you try to regulate natural gas and try to pull it back. They found out, oh, wait a minute, that's not going to work because people are – they need their heat.
Yeah.
So we had to turn it all back on again.
And they've had to stop building because they won't let them put the pipeline in, so they don't have enough natural gas to begin with in New York. And they've stopped their pipeline saying, no, we're going to go all electric. What do they think – this is what I never get. Where did the electricity come from? Did it just magically end up in that power line? That's what they seem to think. Is it just magically ended up there? Probably somebody burned a fossil fuel somewhere to create that electricity that came to you so you could put it in your battery or your whatever else it is. And if you use pure science, if you wanted to do this logically and you said, I want to burn the least amount of fossil fuel possible, you would not say, I'm going to create energy with burning fossil fuel, store it in a battery where I lose 20 to 30% of whatever I produce, let it sit in a battery where I only get 90% of what I put in the battery back, because you would burn a lot more fossil fuel to get the same amount of power. You also wouldn't say that we would ramp these plants up to 100% and ramp them back down and ramp them back up as the wind blows and the sun shines, because you'd find you're using even more and more and more of this fossil fuel that you're trying to ban. If you truly wanted to do it, get some nuclear power plants out there. Look at where you locate your natural gas-powered generators and get those generation systems out of areas like the San Joaquin Valley, where we're caught with this airflow that we can't move the air out. I mean, if you really, really cared, but that's not what they care about. It's about an agenda. And that agenda is to control the economy. That agenda is to control capitalism. And that's what it keeps coming down to, because the science doesn't make sense, nor does it make economic sense what they're trying to force on us. But we're with that. That's where we are. So back to these houses. Okay. So what is your option if you live in an area where they're going to shut the power off? Your option is to get some backup generation and battery power somehow, so that you can, when you're off grid, you can keep your refrigerator on and you can have a light on and some minor things. And also remember that because of the fires, the new law took effect July 1st of this year that said that if you put an automatic garage door opener in it, it must have a battery backup. And so you're going to have to go to your battery backup garage door opener, because some people may not be able to pull that emergency release catch and open the door. Somebody may have died from that fire. The battery backup garage door openers only cost about $40 more than the regular ones. The problem is they have the same problem every battery has. Within 3 to 7 years, that battery backup won't work, and you'll have to replace probably the entire system because it's built into it. My 10-year batteries on my smoke alarms that we installed less than 4 years ago are starting to quit. They're starting to chirp and beep and be bad when we're doing our tests on the properties that we manage. So those are there. But anyway, so if you're in those areas where you're subject to these power outages, you're going to have to be looking at, if you want to try to keep your value, you're going to want to find and keep your sanity, some kind of battery backup system combined with some kind of generator, whether you decide it's solar or you decide you're going to run your diesel engine or what you're going to do. I think you just absolutely have to. It's a must, especially if you've got people that have to have oxygen tanks. If you have any of those things, you know, you're going to have to take a look at it and see what I can do. What you can do. Again, I don't think there's any battery that will last 10 years. I don't think it exists. I looked at what they're doing, what Tesla's doing with its battery, and they're doing an 8-year warranty on their battery. Of course, they haven't been there for 8 years, so no one knows whether that battery will last that long, but they have given an 8-year warranty on their battery. By the way, the battery for the Tesla is between $35,000 and $40,000.
And I'm sure it's a prorated warranty, right? Just like your automobile battery is.
Of course, of course.
Sure.
Right. And so, you know, they've had a few people whose batteries have already failed, but that's well under the 8 years, but they're claiming that that's some of the reason that they failed. But in order to get people to buy that, and they're saying that that 8 years should get you 300,000 miles on that battery. And I kind of did some math, and I said, if it's $30,000 to get 300,000 miles, gasoline might have been cheaper. Yeah, I mean, even at $3 or $4 to the gallon, gasoline might have been cheaper than the battery. Of course, your car depreciates the second you get into it. But back to the houses. So you're going to need some kind of battery backup. The other issue we're up against everywhere is insurance. Because if we're going to have power off, that means the fire trucks don't have any way sometimes to pump water. If their town pumps are out, if they haven't backed that up, there's a lot of emergency planning that needs to be going on right now in every city that's subject to backups. What are you doing about your traffic lights next time? What are you doing about all of those things? And quite honestly, this is going to be a California issue for 10 years at least, and maybe longer, unless we drastically change policies and do some legislation to change that. So it will affect your property value. I believe it will negatively affect it. unless you protect yourself against those negative effects. And I think you're going to have to take a look at it, because welcome to California, comrade. This is what we tell you to do, and you do it whether it's good for you or not, just like all third world countries and all socialist areas.
There you go. All right, 490-5858, 800-776-5858. This is Real Talk on KMJ. We'll be right back.
Now back to Real Talk on News Talk 580, 1059 KMJ.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joined in the studio with Brad Maskey, 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Let's go to the phones now and say hello to Jazz in Fresno. You're on KMJ.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I had a question for Brad. I got a home that was built in 2017, and it had to have the solar, and I've used this property as a rental, and what's happened is the company that did the solar, the solar's on the home, but they're charging me because the solar, I guess the solar panels are on the roof and they're creating energy, so I'm having to pay like a monthly bill every month for the energy that's created on technically my roof. But I'm just wondering, was this kind of the law where the
the contract, whatever contract you guys did, so you did some kind of solar purchase agreement with it, so the tenant is getting free electricity and you're paying for it.
They pay something, but
right. But you have a lease agreement, so you've leased your solar equipment. You don't own it, and so that's why you're making a payment to the solar company. That's your lease payment, and then whatever power it generates is offsetting your tenant's rent. So what you have you're going to be in trouble with new laws. What you're going to have to do is somehow take that into account as to what you charge for rent for the property, is how cheap is their electric bill if you're the one on the line to pay the lease payment for the solar lease. And you need to be aware that that effective yesterday, effective a week ago, the maximum you can raise your rent on an existing tenant is 5% plus the annual cost of inflation. The rates that I can find for this area are between 2.6 and 3%, depending on how conservative you want to be for the CPI for the Fresno area or the Porterville area, meaning that you can't raise the rent more than 7.5%. So you need to take a good look at that. What's happening is you're paying the lease payment on the solar. They're getting the benefit of the solar being on the roof for whatever power it generates. And that's why I do not like solar leases at all. I like purchases, and even if you have to finance it, because it's tougher to sell the property and so on. How much is the monthly payment on the lease?
It's roughly between $50 to $60.
Right. So do you think your system is producing that much power?
Well, I kind of asked the renters what kind of PG&E bill they were getting in the summer, and it was about a $50 to $60 bill they were getting.
And how big is the property?
That's 1,800 square feet.
Yeah, so they could have had a $300 bill. Yeah, so it's producing some power and some benefit. So you have to take that into consideration with your rent. But again, understand that if you try now to pass that bill on to your tenant, this law that was signed a week ago is retroactive to March 1st for rent increases. So any rent increase that you charged right now, if it exceeds that 7.5%, let's say, of their current rent, if you were to try to do that, effective January 1st, you'd have to reduce it back down to whatever 7.5% was. But your tenants are getting the benefit of it, and you're paying for it.
Yeah. There's no way of getting out of that, though.
That's not
part of the purchase of the home.
No, there isn't. That was somehow they did a lease agreement on that solar, which I hate.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Just thought I'd get your take on it.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Up next, let's go to Steve in Monterey. You're on KMJ.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah. Hey, I'm building a triplex in Sanger, California.
Yes.
And the city's requiring us to go underground with electricity.
Yes.
And we went to them and said, and tried to get them to do a variance because we're in an established neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
There's no other service that's underground. Our electricity coming to the buildings above ground, so they're going to have to go down the pole and underground.
Right.
And it's going to, and by forcing us to do that, it's going to cost us $14,000 more. Is there any recourse we have on this? Like, we talked to city about it, they said, well, you know, you could try to ask for a variance, but this is going to push it so far down, you guys are going to never get this building complete.
They adopted that for aesthetic reasons, that they don't want to see the power lines anymore, and they adopted it for all new construction, so no one else retroactively has to do it. So, no, they passed a regulation to put you underground. And if they were thinking, they wouldn't have done it in neighborhoods that are existing and changing. But apparently their goal is to eventually get everything underground, and you're the first one to pay for it in your neighborhood. Lucky you.
Yeah. Okay. I just wonder if there's any recourse because, you know, it's like the power poles above ground. Everything's above ground. So, I mean, yeah, that didn't make sense.
You can go for a variance. I don't know what the fee is in Sanger. I can tell you in Visalia that by the time we file for a variance and everything, we're spending about $2,400 in fees. And you go before the planning commission, and they have to make five findings. One of those findings is that it's an unusual that no other property has the same thing. And if the property's all around you or all overhead and everything's overhead, the planning commission may rule in your favor. It'll delay you about 30 to 40 days. And, you know, depending on how quickly you get your application in and you support your facts on it. But that if they say a variance is an option, you could try it, and then it's a toss of the coin.
Yeah, because see, they're basically telling us it isn't an option. You know, they're basically saying it is an option. If you try to do it, it's going to push your project so far down. And we even went to them and showed them five projects that they've completed, and they're completing that they're allowing to go overhead right now.
Right. That sounds like you'd qualify for the variance. And so what you might do is take the permit and then go in for the variance while you're in the process of building.
Yeah, well, see, we're to the point where they're going to be installing electricity now within 30 days.
Yeah, not if you ask for a variance.
After that?
Pardon me?
Yeah.
You won't get your money back.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Steve. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Up next, let's go to Steven in Visalia. You're on KMJ.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
Good.
Hey, Brad, I got a question for you. I've got a rental up north. I'm in Visalia, one of your neighbors. And it's back in August, and we refied back about August of last year when historically low rates were pushing around 6%. And at that time, all the smart money was they'd go nothing but up, right?
Right.
Now we're at least around in August, we were pushing 3 and some change, and so I called Chase, the people that already had the note, and I said, what are we looking at? So we started throwing around the numbers, and it took about 90 minutes to put all these numbers together, but he's pretty sure he has a good deal. Well, week after week go by, we get a trickle of an email here and there and here and there. So long story short, the appraisal gets done this week, and it comes out at about 205. I'm thinking, Zillow's thinking about 220. Well, and I look at the appraisal, it looks pretty tight, but now they're saying they need to back out of this deal unless they want to. So basically,
what was the appraisal a year ago?
So the appraisal was exactly 205, and it's exactly 205 now.
So they're saying there's
and
been.
I'm sure it's probably gone up and then maybe trickled down a little.
They're saying there's been zero change in that market in the last year?
It's two different appraisers.
Right, but I'm just saying, I mean, that sounds unusual.
Yeah, exactly. What are the chances?
Right, and I mean, so appraisals are not necessarily fair market value. Appraisals are made with the conditions that the lender set on them, and if the lender set really, really tight conditions on this because they really, really don't want to make this loan, then the appraisal will do it. If you can find comps, you can challenge that appraisal and ask the appraiser to look at you as the owner can show him stuff and say, wait a minute, what about this comp? What about this comp? If you have any comparable sales and, or have access to it. And, if you want, give me a call at 732 4444 next week and let me look at it, and I'll see if there's any comparables that would help you to fight that value.
Well, Brad, you sold one of our houses a couple of years ago, and that was one of the things I thought about, unless you thought there was somebody else. How about going after Chase? They're getting like, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's like Jesse James kind of money for a simple little refi. Is there anything they can do in their points? Because what they're saying is I need to write them a check to basically make it work so I can save $20 over a month.
I'd look at a different lender. So you've paid for the appraisal so far and you don't like it. Would you pay $650?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I want to roll
9 cents. Go ahead.
I'd look at a different lender. You don't have to stay with Chase just because that's where you are. Let's look at a different lender. Let's look at what the comps are. Give me a call. I'll help you.
All right. How about getting deposits and stuff back from Chase?
Which deposits?
They wanted like $500 down just to begin the process.
That would be towards the... They can't what? Charge. California law makes it illegal to charge up front. Period.
The guy's saying he's going to go to his bosses and see if he can put in for do me a courtesy of getting my money back.
So California law makes it illegal for them to charge anything up front. They can charge you the actual cost of the appraisal, and they can have you pay for the actual credit report, but they cannot. They cannot make you give them $500 up front to start this. That's against California law.
All right. Maybe I'll make an appointment with you later in the week, and we'll see what we can put together.
I'd be happy to talk with you, Steve.
Sounds like a good idea. Thanks for the call. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Time to take a break. This is Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
This is Real Talk. Have a question or comment for Brad? Call now, 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Now back to Real Talk on KMJ.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Michael Reed. This is Brad Maskey, and those are the numbers you can use to call into the show. I've got to head back over the phones now and say hello to Dale and Visalia. You're on KMJ.
Hello, Brad.
Good morning, Dale. How are you?
I'm doing great. I have a question for you on solar power.
Okay.
2 years ago, I think it was, we installed solar units on the roof, and they are working great. But at the time they installed them, they told us that you cannot get a backup battery just designed to kick in when power goes down. You're either going to be on the grid or completely off the grid with a battery system attached to solar. Do you know if that's still true or anything about that?
Well, so SCE and PG&E both have that contract that say that you can't do that, okay? And the reason, again, was to protect the linemen from working on the line if they shut the power down, that you're not feeding power back into the system. And so there were specific areas that variances were granted where they would get the contract where they could feed their battery. But when you first did it, when you set it up, you could have got a battery backup system. It would have been a different negotiation with the power company and what they did and what they would allow you to do, as I understand it. Because, but 90, as I said, 99% of the people didn't do that. They just simply got their solar. And that's because the battery storage backups weren't that popular yet, but the Public Utilities Commission does allow them to block you from being able to feed power back, either be totally off-grid or totally on. And then you have cities that say if there's power available, you can't be off-grid. So the question is, can you change the contract with SCE now that you already have your power? And that would be something to investigate, because I think that they may be more open to doing that. The question is, how do they inspect it to prove that when your solar is producing, that it's not feeding back into the system? And they can do that. So, but it's a rework of your contract with SCE and with your solar provider.
Okay. And, I mean, it would seem like they could have a switching system that would handle that. But
They do, but for fear, as I said, I mean, this is the rationale behind why they denied all those people the right to feed it back. The rationale is that if they have to shut off the power, they don't want 400 houses feeding power into lines that aren't supposed to feed it back, and no one is able to check that system to make sure it's not feeding it back, that it's only feeding it into yours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the rationale behind how they set up that ruling for them, and what they're doing out there. Is it changing? I don't know. I know some people who have been able to get the battery back up in the last year and a half, but 3 years ago you couldn't.
Well, my thought was that now they're at a point where they're actually going to be shutting off power on some sort of a regular basis, that they might want to rethink those options being available to the solar owners. But okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dale.
You can install a switching system, correct?
There is a switching system that will block it, that allows you to not feed power back. So what you have to do when you get your solar, he said totally off the grid, you have to do a no solar where they don't buy any solar back from you. Your solar has to go 100% to you, and you can't feed any back to them at all. So right now, if you produce too much solar, everybody's feeding into the main grid. They're not feeding their own house.
Right.
So when he's saying you have to be totally off the grid, that switching system says you never give money, you never give power back to the utility company. It always only goes to you. And if you produce excess and you don't use it, it's gone.
Why does it always seem that the taxpayers just get screwed?
Yeah.
there's like no winning in there at all.
That is what it is.
All right. 490-5858. Time to take a break. Hour two right around the corner. But first, we'll check in with Westwood One News. This is KMJ.
Welcome to Real Talk with Brad Maskey.
Inflation is starting to pick up, and the Federal Reserve is also talking about raising interest rates again this month.
It is fear. There are many on the sideline. What happens if prices fall another 5%? You've lost the equity you put in the home.
There's still a backlog. Lots of houses on the market. According to the Case-Shiller Index, prices have double-dipped in most major markets.
Cutting through the noise.
Real Talk with Brad Maskey, the Valley's number one live and local real estate show, only on KMJ.
No, you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Hey, welcome back to Hour 2 of Real Talk. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joining in the studio with Brad Maskey. Brad's a broker in Visalia at Realty Stars, helping buyers and sellers for over 40 decades now. You can reach him via email, brad@kmjbrad.com, or call him now. He's here in the studio live, 490-5858, or 800-776-5858. Let's head back to the phones and say hello to Peter. You're on KMJ.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Is this Brad?
Yes.
Hi, Brad. We're trying to fix an older deed. The grantee took title with the name of Mary, and her real name is Maria. And I'm trying to figure out the easiest way to fix this.
Did she ever have any ID that said Mary, and how old is the deed?
The deed's about 30 years old, and she has no documentation saying Mary whatsoever.
Did she ever go by Mary?
Commonly, her friends would call her Mary.
Okay. Is she the only one on title?
Her and her husband.
So probably you could get a notary if you wanted to clear that up that would let you reissue that grant deed and put AKA, also known as, give some evidence, some witness to the notary public that just really is the same person, and you're just trying to get clear up the name, and you could probably get a notary public to take a look at that and do that for you.
Okay, I went through one notary and they refused to do it, but I guess I could keep looking.
You know what? My wife is a notary. I can't speak for her. I'll ask her about it, but we've done it before. If we had some evidence to prove that it's the same person, then that's what we have to do. We could just make sure that it really truly is the same person. Okay. And we could possibly do that for you. My office number, if you want to call us during the week, is 732-4444. And we'll look it up and tell you what documentation we could use to re-record that. Again, even a witness statement that her husband is there with her, and same person, had the same wife for the last 30 years.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. 490-5858. 800-776-5858. Where are we going to launch now?
Well, right before we went to the break, we had a call, and I want to clarify on a little bit more. I didn't have enough time to talk to Dale about that solar. So we were talking earlier about the power outages, and I was saying that 99% of the people do not have the ability to generate their own power. So when the power's off, the power is off. And again, he was saying that he was told 2 years ago, you have to be off grid to do it. And it's not really off grid. And we were talking about the switching. So I would just want to kind of make that clear. What happens is that in the older solar systems, lots of people produced more power than they were going to use. And even in the newer ones, when you're not using all the power, the local utility company is buying the excess power back from you. In the closed system, you can get power from SCE or PG&E or utility company, but you don't sell anything back to them. So if you generate excess power, that goes to your battery power and it goes to you, or it's not used. I mean, that's basically what the difference is. And most people chose, and in the past, you got to sell power back to the utility companies at retail rates. They might give you 15 or 16 cents a kilowatt hour for the power you generated. But now the new contracts, they'll only buy it from you at 3.5 cents or something per kilowatt hour, much lower rate. And that's why I was trying to explain to Dale that he may have to break his contract, because he may be selling power now to the power company, offsetting his bill when he's producing too much if he has a huge solar system, and buying it back at other times. Remember that the utility companies originally, California originally was telling them, bring in as much power as you can, bring in as much power as you can. And now they're telling them, no, you can't oversize your solar system. There's a maximum size you can put on each roof and what you need to do. So that's what that change is, and that's why these folks don't have it. So if you want a system that powers your house and your battery, you can't sell to the utility company. It has to be a one-way switch. You can take power in, but you can't push power out.
Ever.
And they do that to protect the grid from when they're shutting the grid down, so that you don't accidentally push power onto them. And will there be a change in that law or a change in technology that allows them to say, okay, we trust you to not electrocute our line workers? I don't know. But the way it is right now, that's what your choices are. Is you can't, if you choose to be self-contained, you can still get power from them, but you can't sell power to them, as I understand it from the solar guys that I talk to once a week when we have a conversation.
So it sounds to me like it's a better deal to continue selling your power back to the grid than to just have a battery system.
It could be, and it depends on what they'll buy it for and how they change that in the future too. Remember that as more and more solar comes into the grid, it becomes more and more expensive to operate the grid. The grid operators say that within 11 years now, by 2030, the average cost that they have to charge for delivered electricity has got to be 65 cents a kilowatt hour to cover the grid. They might be able to get as low as 50 cents a kilowatt hour, but they're predicting 65 cents. I'll put that in perspective. In 2013, you paid 13 cents a kilowatt hour for your base rate. You're at 22 cents a kilowatt hour now. They're talking about over the next 11 years, it will go up 2.5 times. And that's caused because of the cost of all the solar and all the wind coming into the grid. And they still have to have the backup power for when the wind and stuff's not there. They also have to pay the cost of fixing and updating their lines and making them work with all this power coming from every direction. And I'm telling you, power is going to be really, really, really expensive in California. Remember, our neighbors are still selling it at 7 to 9 cents a kilowatt hour delivered. If you look at your power bill, the delivery charge is over 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Then you have the DWR bond charge. Then you have the other charge. Then you have the other charge, and so on. So where before you even say the cost per kilowatt hour was 3.5 cents that they bought it for, you're at 22 cents a kilowatt hour. So pretty soon we're going to have electric rates in California, not double what the states around us are, but triple. And quadruple. And we'll see what happens at that point.
So the more green energy that we create, the higher we're going to pay for electric.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
You will be forced to get solar because you won't be able to afford to power your house if you don't. And then you'll say, I can't run everything anyway because I can't afford enough solar to power it. I mean, that's the new California coming.
I can afford a U-Haul.
And they want to make it all electric too.
Yeah.
Wow.
All electric.
All right. 490-5858. Let's go back to the phones and say hello to David in Fresno. You're on KMJ.
Hi. Thanks for my call. I really love your program Saturday morning. So you guys do a great job. I have a question. I bought a empty cul-de-sac lot 30 years ago. We had a custom home built on the lot. Our property taxes are based on a square footage of the home, $2,850 per the plans. But once the home was built, the contractor stated that the home actually penciled out an additional 100 square feet. So I have a bigger home than what's reflected in the plans. And my square lot, my lot footage, instead of being 11,600, it's actually about 13,500 because it's one of those irregularly shaped cul-de-sac lots.
Right, hard to calculate.
Yeah, the question is, when we sell the home, how can we get the records to reflect, or is that even an issue, or what are your thoughts?
So when you sell the home, go pull a tape measure on it and run the calculation. If it's 100 square feet bigger than what the county records show by the tape measure pulled around the exterior of the house that this is what the livable heated and cooled area is, and say, but each buyer should verify independently what that square footage is. And also, if you have a calculation showing why you believe the lot's bigger than what the assessor says, you can use it. So when I market that property, I will say seller says house is 1950, assessor says 1850. There are several counties that we could, once we get an appraisal, see, and you never do this until you're actually selling the house. But once we get an appraisal, we could give it to the county, and they would adjust their records. And are you in Fresno County?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, when you get ready to sell it and you've got verification that the house is bigger than what their record shows, and you have a reason why, they're not going to reassess it because you show that the lot's bigger and the house is bigger. It's been there. Your Prop 13 base is established. They're not going to change it. And you might be able to go down even now and get them to make that change. Just depends on how busy the assessor is when you get there. I've done it before in Tulare County. I've done it before in Kings County where, you know, it took them about 30 days and they updated their record.
Perfect.
They just need verification. And you measuring the house and telling them may not be acceptable. I've had appraisers and then I've measured it to say, look, here's where it was different. And somewhere in their record, they have an old drawing of it or the building permit. And again, pull your tape and make sure before you say it's 100 feet bigger. Just because the contractor said so doesn't mean it is, because I've measured them and they were smaller.
Understood. Understood. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, David. Okay, now I have a question. Let's say you're looking to buy a home. And say it was built in the early 50s, and somewhere in the 70s there was an addition put on the home, but a permit was never pulled. Let's say they added a nice master bedroom with a master bath. So the original drawings on record with the city do not show that on the property. What should the future buyer do to handle that so that they don't get themselves in a jam?
Well, so if the seller knows, they're supposed to disclose it to you. Okay, that this was built without permit, but the seller might have bought it after it was already built without permit, and they don't know it's built without permit. So it all depends on where you are, how good their permit records are about what was there and what wasn't there. I can tell you that there have been lawsuits where people bought a house and it had an addition that was done 40 years ago without permits. And when they went in to try to get it permitted, they made them tear the addition down. They would not allow it. Just flat out said, take it off. It's been there for 40 years. I'm sorry. Goodbye. This was in the Bay Area, and it became a major lawsuit for the realtors involved. Generally, if I go into the city or county and there was some addition that's part of the house and fully under the roof and all the same as the house, and it's years old, they'll do an inspection of the property, make sure health and safety is okay, and pay for a fee, an inspection fee for that, and they will add it to the square footage at the county, generally. I've got one where the building department told me, bring the 30-year-old structure up to current code. And I said, current code 2020 or 2019, depends on when you pull the permit. I said, so you're going to make us put solar on the addition. Well, and pay the school impact fees and pay $21,000. So you have to go talk to the local building authority and find out how they're going to enforce the rule on a long ago added addition. And it can be a huge can of worms, or it can be fairly simple. Again, generally, it hasn't been a big deal, but there have been cases where it is a big deal. And as we're getting newer building officials, people that haven't been there for years, they're adopting their own policies, saying, no, this is what I'm going to do. I don't care if for the last 20 years we've allowed you to say it was built 30 years ago, so you only had to be, meet that code. I'm the head building official. I want you to meet today's code so I can feel safe and good about myself. It is totally a local jurisdiction call. There is no state law on it. There is no rule that tells you what you can do, but it can be a huge issue.
Okay, so it's important that the buyer do their own due diligence to make sure that everything like that's covered.
Right, and I, City of Fresno, I went in on one. They tell me they have the permit and everything ever built, and they showed me the permit for it being built, and it's just a square on a piece of paper.
Ah, the good old days.
And the front porch was not permitted, which is just a patio cover that's 6 feet by 8 feet.
That was it.
Yeah, how to get a permit for it.
Wow. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. This is Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ. We'll be right back.
Now back to Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
Hi, welcome back. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joining in the studio with Brad Maskey. Brad's a broker in Visalia Realty Stars. 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Those are the numbers you can use to ask questions of Mr. Maskey while he's here today. Well, we've covered a lot of things so far.
We got to go back and talk about these new laws that were signed. One in particular is the rent control law, statewide rent control. So first of all, when this was first coming through, it got amended, got amended on the floor, got changed, finally got signed by the governor. And it's now been signed officially since the 9th of October and hasn't been changed since it was signed by the governor, although it could be changed in the future because there's a group trying to put an initiative on the ballot to strengthen it even further. Again, this is one of those laws that is so damn complex that going through it has caused us as property management company, I had to set up a spreadsheet so I can figure out what we're going to be doing with our property owners and tenants' properties in the future about rent increases, evictions, all of those things, because it changed all of those things in California. Wasn't just a rent cap legislation. It changes how you can evict tenants, when you can evict tenants, what you can evict tenants for, how you hold title to property, all of that suddenly makes sense. And some of it was confusing and had to be read to say, what does that really mean? So I'm going to start with the part that I was first having trouble determining when would it really take effect and finally have some clarification. So it does not apply to new construction, is what they tell you. It does not apply to new construction. And how do you define new construction? And according, and this, so this is AB 1684, I'm sorry, 1482, AB 1482 that passed rent control statewide. We've been fighting it. It got passed. But what is new construction? Under the definition of new construction in this assembly bill, it's anything built in the last 15 years. Okay. So if your property is built in the last 15 years, it's exempt from this law. When does the 15 years start? It starts today, whatever today is, 15 years ago. So if I had a property that was built in November of 2004, it's new construction. But in December of this year, it's no longer new construction. The 15 years rolls with the date. It's always 15 years from whatever day today is when you try to increase your rents, okay? You're under now rent control as soon as your property is more than 15 years old. The day it's older than 15 years old, it is now rent-controlled property in the state of California. It limits the amount of rent increase to 5% plus the inflation rate, the CPI, for your area. It does not say whether it's the annual CPI, the weekly, the monthly, that will be up to tenants and their advocates to fight you in court if they think you raised it too high. I'll give you an example. I got on to the index rate to look it up today to find out what some of the indexes were. I looked this morning and I got the September rates. If you were in the Los Angeles area, it was 3%. If you were in the San Diego area, it was 1.7%. This is the September rate, which is 1 year through September, okay? Looked in the Porterville, Visalia, it was 3.1%, okay? But am I supposed to look at that, or am I supposed to look at the annual CPI for, say, 2018? And then that number is completely different on every one of those. It doesn't say what that is. So again, you're going to have to err on the side of caution. If you decide to raise somebody's rent 5% plus, you better pull the September CPI for the Porterville metro area, for the Visalia, because Visalia, Porterville's their own area. Fresno has its area. You better pull that one and say the September 1 year CPI was 3.1 plus 5. I didn't beat the 8%. You better make that calculation and hold it in your file in case they claim that you're illegally raising their rent. Okay, so that's the rent increase. What property does it apply to? That's the next thing in my spreadsheet. What properties does this rent cap apply to? So we talked about new construction is exempt. Owner-occupied single-family residences are exempt. Owner-occupied duplexes are exempt if I live in one unit. Owner-occupied with two rentals on it, a triplex, is not exempt. If I'm renting a room in my own home, it's exempt. If I own my home as a corporation or an LLC, even if I live in it, not exempt from rent control on the other unit, the duplex, the other units on it. So all those attorneys that were telling all the investors to buy all their single family residences as LLCs are now locked into rent control. If you have a partnership and it's a single family residence, it's exempt. So single family is exempt unless it's owned by a corporation or an LLC. You with me so far? If the tenant is in the property for more than 1 year, they are your tenant for life unless they want to move out. Except for those properties that I said were exempt. If the tenant lives in the property for more than 1 year, they're going to become your tenant for life. There's more to this. We'll take a break.
I can't wait.
I'll tell you more good news after the break.
All right, 490-5858, 800-776-5858. This is Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
Listen to Real Talk with Brad Maskey every Saturday from 10 to 12 on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joined in the studio with Brad Maskey. Brad's a broker in Visalia at Realty Stars, helping buyers and sellers for over four decades now. You can reach him via email, brad@kmjbrad.com. His office number also is 732-4444. Call him during the week. Also, you can reach him here. He's live, 490-5858.
Before we went on the break, I was trying to explain the complexity of this law. And again, I was just going through those things, not because I think you driving in the car, you'll remember it. But I wanted you to know that it takes a spreadsheet now to figure out what we can do with our rentals. How much can I increase the rent rate? And it depends. Can I raise the rent? Can I evict the tenant? And the last thing that this law did that is really going to throw some wrenches in, and this is what I wanted to explain, is that if a tenant has been in your property, remember there are some exemptions, owner-occupied units, blah, 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 blah. But if a tenant has been in your property for a year or more, you better like that tenant, because as long as they pay their rent on time and they obey the rules, you can never kick them out. Pretty much. Now, there are a couple of exceptions to never. If you're going to move back into the property yourself and live in it, you can ask them to leave for that purpose, but you have to either give them 1 month's free rent or pay them a month to relocate themselves. If you're going to make a major renovation and remodel of the property, not just paint it, I mean a major renovation in which no one could live in it while you were doing all the work that you're doing to modernize it, in that instance, pay them 1 month free rent or let them stay there for free, you know, pay them or move them, you can get them out. So I think you're going to see next year a lot of 11-month leases where at the 11th month they're going to say, do we really want this tenant here forever or not? You know, because once we get to the 12th month, they can be that real pain in the tuchus tenant that you don't ever want. You're going to have to make up your mind pretty quickly whether this is somebody you want to stay in those properties.
How about a lot more listings of former rental property going on the market? How about that?
We'll have to see. And again, I'm going to tell you that, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for mom and pop to manage their own rentals. They're going to need property management, somebody to help them. Like I said, we're having to look at, and this rent increase rule is retroactive to March 1st. If you've increased the rent on somebody before March 1st and you exceeded the amount for your area, on January 1st, the rent goes back down to what it could have been. You can continue to collect it through the end of this year, but January 1st, it goes to what it could have been. So we increased a tenant from $600 to $650. The CPI looks like I might have only been able to take them up to $648. We might be $2 too high.
Great.
If they decide in January to complain and say, you got to reduce the rent $2 a month, we won't go to court over it or anything. But I mean, that's how close this is becoming. Unless I look at the CPI and it's 3.1%, then I'm good.
But you know, it's hard enough for the mom and pop owners to deal with things already with rentals. But when you start stacking on this legation, to me, it's just, I would just throw my hands up. I'm out of the game.
Well, I spent 2 hours putting together a chart for the properties that we manage so that I can add that chart onto the properties so that the people that we're managing for and my secretaries can say, all right, wait, when was this built? When was this? Is this subject to rent control? Is it not? So we can mark it on the file. When do we hit? So we don't make any mistakes with these tenants. Can we evict? Can we not? You know, all of these notes that now have to go into every property, it has become incredibly more complex to control what you're doing with these rentals.
Now what if it's a month-to-month rental?
It doesn't matter if they've been there for a year.
Okay.
Even if it's on a month to month, once they've lived in the property for 12 months. So,
okay.
I mean, that's what the deciding factor is going to be, is how long have they been in the property once they're in. Now, if they don't pay their rent, you can kick them out. If they tear your property up, you know, those evictions you can still do, and you don't have to pay them a month's rent. You just have to pay your $1,000 to your attorney plus court fees plus.
Right.
But you don't
right.
have to hand them a check to get out when they're breaking the rules.
Now, what if they violate some of the rules, like you just mentioned, in a lease or a rental agreement? I mean,
Then you can evict them.
Well, is there levels like, well, that's a minor thing or this is a major thing?
There's never been anything that has been written in the legislature that tells you, and it's up to each judge's personal preference. In Tulare County, they have to break the rules about 3 times with warnings, and it has to be pretty severe before they'll let me evict them for that. In Fresno County, they have to break the rules about 10 times, and they better be threatening to kill somebody before they'll let us kick them out for those causes.
Amazing.
I mean, that's the difference in the severity.
All right, 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Let's jump back over to the phones and say hello to Joel in Fresno. You're on KMJ.
Hi, Brad. Question for you. I understand the rent control increase starting January 1st. The hard part I understand is it doesn't seem like it would be too hard to challenge is though being retroactive. I mean, if you're an investor, an appraiser, a lender, anyone that's bought commercial or multifamily properties in 2019 based on, you know, rents that maybe had recently been increased or increased since the change of ownership, and all those numbers that you bought that property that you based on are now nil. What do you have to do?
Give your tenant 60-day notice right now if they've been there more than a year and kick them out right now and rent to a different tenant at the current market rent. So a new tenant, you can charge any rent you want to. The old tenants, if you've done a rent increase since March 1st, if it's more than that number, you can collect it till the end of the year. And January 1st, their rent goes down to whatever that number would have been. Your option is
nothing.
Your option is, if they've been there less than a year, 30-day notice and get them out before the end of the year, or 60-day notice if they've been there more than a year, which is the law right now. And if you do that after November 2nd, you're too late on the 60-day notices. You're stuck with them.
Well, I have one other question, if it's okay.
Sure.
Then regarding, let's say, a mobile home park.
Yes.
You know, mobile home parks, they got around rent control laws by passing on the utility costs, water, garbage, and sewer.
Water, garbage, and sewer are included as rent increases specifically within this legislation. So any increase in rent for any reason is included as part of the rent increase in the calculation you have to make.
So they were prepared for that one.
Yes, they were. And by the way, if there's a local ordinance that's stricter, we don't have any here in Fresno or Visalia, the stricter ordinance is
Yet.
The one that applies. Right.
Yet.
Right. So right. But yeah, they did include utilities. It's just like the guy that was telling me about his solar. He can't suddenly add that solar cost onto it either.
Well, that leads me to one other question. You know how I don't know when it starts, but where each household you only can have 55 gallons of water usage a day. How is that being handled by commercial or multifamily properties where the owner is paying that bill, has no control over the tenant's use of that water?
We don't know how that's going to be implemented, but it's not going to be on a property-by-property basis the way the law is written. It's going to be by water district by water district. So I'm in Cal Water in Visalia. They're going to be limited to that amount plus some amount for landscape, and we don't know what that amount is. And it has an entire district. And then they're the ones subject to the fine, not the individual property owner. Although you're already being fined.
So the neighbors are going to hate each other because one's going to want to grow their own food, and the other one's going to have rocks in their yard. So
exactly.
Hate each other.
Oh, no, exactly. That's exactly. You got it. 2022, January 1 is when that hits.
Great. All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 490-5858. This is Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ. We'll be right back.
Now back to Real Talk on News Talk 580-1059 KMJ.
Hey, we are back. I'm your host, Michael Reed, joined in the studio with Brad Maskey. 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. Let's jump back to the phones now and say hello to Carla in Corcoran. You're on KMJ.
Hey, good morning. I have a couple of questions in regards to this law.
Okay.
I'm visiting Corcoran right now, and I was listening to the radio, and I heard you guys talking about this new bill. And I live in Los Angeles in a city named Southgate.
Yes.
And I've been living in my apartment for 4 years. And my landlord, she gave me a month-to-month lease in April, right?
Yes.
So I was paying $1,275. She gave me a rent increase for 10% because Southgate doesn't have rent control. So she gave me a rent increase for 10%. That boosted up to $1,400. So, and that was April this year. She told me that she needed to sign the month-to-month lease for the insurance purposes. So I was fine because I always pay my rent, and I've been living there for, I don't like to move. I've been living there for a couple of years already. So then in the beginning of this month, she gave me a 30-day notice for another 10% rent increase, which would boost my rent to $1,540.
That's a jump.
Okay, so first of all, she can't raise your rent more than 10% without a 60-day notice if you've been in the property for more than a year. It doesn't matter whether you're on month to month or not. So she has to give you at least 60 days notice to do any 10% rent increase. Period. So the 30-day notice, she can't evict you for it. She had to give you 60 days notice. It doesn't matter that she put you on a month-to-month tenancy. It's how long you've lived in the property and you've been there more than a year. That means she has to give you a 60-day notice, okay? Secondly, it's possible, assuming she gives you the right notice, that you might have to pay 1 month at the higher rent. Possible, probably highly unlikely. But as of January 1st, your rent goes down to you were paying $1,250 before?
I was paying $1,275.
$1,275, okay. The maximum rent increase on that in Los Angeles will be about 8%. Okay. So it'd be about $100. So in January 1st, she has to reduce your rent down to that number. But I'm going to give you some advice. Don't say anything to her until after November 5th. And I'm telling you why, because if she starts eviction before November 5th, she could give you a 60-day notice because you've been there more than a year. She could start evicting you and saying, I just don't want you as a tenant, and you will be evicted from that unit because the laws won't have taken effect yet. You could probably fight it. But after November 5th, just go in and fight her and just say, wait a minute, you can't do the 10% rent increase. And I'm sure there's somebody, an advocate, who will help you with that. Carla, those seem like stupid rent increases. They're unfair to begin with if you've been there for years. And this is what dumb landlords do that cause dumb state laws like this to get passed, as they take advantage of tenants.
That's a great point.
So, Carla, both things they're doing are not legal, and I wish you good luck. Thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call as well. Up next, let's go to Rick. Rick has a question about rent as well. You're on KMJ.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
AB 1482, that's the new law, is that correct?
It's AB 1482, yes, took effect.
Okay. I went online and looked it up a couple of weeks ago, and it said what I read, that single-family residences are exempt if you own that residence, you know, and rent it, you own it yourself?
Yes.
Okay. So again, you're the individual owner. It's no
single family right? Residence. Even if you own 100 SFRs, they're exempt.
A single family residence is exempt.
Right.
Okay.
Yep, they are exempt from it.
All right. And then something you said just with the lady about the rent increase. If you do a rent increase of less than 10%, can you still give 1 month notice?
It's five. Well, right now you can, but effective January 1st, no. It's 5% plus whatever CPI is for your area. So Fresno area, it's about 8% is the maximum rent increase you can do, and you have to give 60-day notice to do it.
I see. The 60 days is blanket no matter what.
It becomes. And hers was if you've been in it more than a year, and she had. So, yeah, it's a complex
right.
Law.
Alrighty. Sure, appreciate your show.
Thanks, Rick. And I know there are other callers on hold, but we're not going to make it today. We're hitting the end of our 2 hours. It just flies by.
Well, it sure does.
So thanks for calling in. Again, you might try me at my office, 732-4444 next week.
All right, that's going to do it. Brothers-in-Law are up next on KMJ.